Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here on this Thursday afternoon show. Didn't get it up in the morning, so it's going to be an extra special afternoon Thursday edition. If you listen to the podcast in the morning, well, it's going to be a Friday morning show for you that you might not expect because I'm not really doing Fridays in the off season, but I'm going to try to get some extra episodes in. It's draft week, too, so the schedule is going to be skewed a little bit. Hopefully going to have one for you late night, Thursday night after round one. I'm going to be doing some things and busy over the weekend, but we've got to break down everything that happens in the draft. I'm going to do the shadow draft and all the things that go with the NFL draft and breaking down the 49er selections that will go well into May, breaking down this draft, because what else are we going to do? All we got is time in the offseason to break down every angle of the draft, all of the new players that are about to be 49ers in a week or so. Today's show, we're going to look at the schedule, of course, big news schedule release. I think maybe it's made a bigger deal out of than it should be, but right now, draft fatigue kind of waiting for this draft to happen. So they dropped the schedule on us. We can talk a little bit about that. That'll be the end of it because maybe we'll start talking about it again around September 8th when the season is about ready to start. But break down the schedule, what's interesting about it from a 49ers perspective. And there was a media day on Wednesday, so let's hear some audio from some of these guys. We really haven't heard from these football players in a long time. So they're back at it, starting some off-season workouts as we are getting into the off-season workout schedule. And we hear from Jimmy Garoppolo, Joe Staley, everybody in good spirits, everything positive this time of year. Guys looking forward to getting things going for the 2019 season. Speaking of draft fatigue, go to Locked On NFL. I am co-hosting a week-long series with the regular Locked On NFL host, Matt Williamson, who's a former writer at ESPN and a former NFL scout. And we're having great fun doing this draft special and using everybody in the Locked On Podcast Network, all the hosts making selections for their picks and bringing analysts in to break down every selection. And Monday through Friday this week, picks 1 through 32, taking you through the whole first round. There's really nothing like it out there in the podcast universe, the way we do this thing. It's almost like you're listening to the live draft. So if you do have that draft fatigue ready for it to get here, go to Locked On NFL, subscribe there, and listen to Monday through Friday show. We've got picks 1 through 32. We've got trades, analysis, and it was a really fun exercise that I hope you guys enjoy, and it's been hugely successful flying up the iTunes charts. I think it's the number one NFL-related show right now on iTunes, which is pretty awesome. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. We're going to be hitting some mailbags as well, getting into next week and some pre-draft episodes, as well as I got to bust out my rankings. Going to have a top 50, got to have some positional rankings, finalizing those right now. And of course, you can subscribe, rate, review the show on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the newest podcast app, Himalaya. Speaking of positional rankings, let's start there. Chris Wilson dropped an article talking about second round options at wide receiver, and it's going to be a real sweet spot. I've talked about it a lot. Day two of the draft, second and third round. I think the 49ers in position, they don't 100% have to go wide receiver in the second round, although it looks like they're gearing up for that mode. There is going to be a good player for them in the third round if they do go another direction. So they have some mobility there. They can move up or down, I think, in that round two area or from three back into two, which would make a lot of sense. And they can play the draft board, see who's there, see what player falls, maybe another position that's thin. They can go there, and then they can attack the wide receiver position still as they, you know, at some point at or before pick 67. And Chris Wilson breaks down a lot of those options in the second round. You can find that on LockedOn49ers.com. Another interesting bit that came down involving wide receivers is Bob McGinn, who's a longtime Green Bay Packers writer, and he every year polls NFL executives and scouts and puts together a ranking of what he's hearing. It's not his individual evaluations. He tries to get a feel from scouts and does a pretty good job, and it tends to be pretty accurate. And I've talked a little bit about different players in this draft that I think I like more than what real teams are going to like. I think Hakeem Butler's number one on that list, but he dropped that list, and looking back, he's been pretty accurate in years past. For example, in 2017, shout out to whoever it was, I'm drawing a blank, I'm not looking at it right now, someone linked me to some of his older ones to see how accurate they are. And I remember this article coming out every year, and it's always pretty good. 2017, he had them in order. Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross, Zay Jones, Juju Smith-Schuster, Curtis Samuel, Cooper Kupp. I think that was straight up the exact order for the first seven wide receivers. And sometimes it's like, yeah, I think a lot of people knew it was going to be something pretty similar to that. But He does a really good job, and it's usually pretty accurate. And so looking at the 2019 wide receiver class, this is how he has them ranked according to the scouts and front office people he has spoken to. Number one, DK Metcalf. Number two, Marquise Brown, a.k.a. Hollywood Brown, the cousin of Antonio Brown. Insanely fast and athletic player. He weighed in only 166 pounds at the combine. Hasn't been able to work out and throw down a 40, which could be 4.3, sub 4.3. He's that fast. He's electric. And NFL loves speed. But he's got this Liz Frank injury, so that foot's been causing him problems. If he's that small, is he going to hold up in the NFL? I don't have Marquise Brown that high. But the DeSean Jackson comparisons are there with him. We saw, you know, we've seen it for years. Ted Ginn. Remember Troy Williamson? He threw down a 4.33 out of Texas A&M, did nothing in the NFL. Ted Ginn's been an okay player, but when he was drafted top 10, I think 9 overall. John Ross a couple years ago was drafted 9 overall. It's like, they're not that good of receivers. I understand they're fast. Tavon Austin, another one. It's really just too high for what they are. And Marquise Brown might be getting that treatment, even though he's a really good player. I think DeSean Jackson had, and DeSean Jackson fell to the second round in 2011? 2010? What year was that? 2009 even? How long ago was that? DeSean Jackson's been around for a while. But coming out of Cal, there was some character stuff, I think, that maybe made him slip as well as size. But Daniel Jeremiah of NFL.com is talking about how Marquise Brown is probably going to be the first wide receiver off the board. Bob McGinn here has him ranked 2 just behind DK Metcalf, and I wouldn't be surprised. But some interesting rankings from there on. So we got Metcalf 1, Brown 2, 3, N'Keal Harry, 4, A.J. Brown, 5, Paris Campbell, another speed demon, 4.31, I believe it was at the combine, but really just more of a gadget player. And I'm definitely going to have Paris Campbell lower. I get the athleticism. He's awesome on like fly sweeps, but I think he caught like 3 passes beyond 5 yards of the line of scrimmage at Ohio State this year. He's just really a gadget type of player, even though the athleticism is definitely there. Riley Ridley is 6, Deebo Samuel 7, Hakeem Butler 8, Miles Boykin 9, and Mecole Hardman 10. So some obvious omissions in that top 10. No Kelvin Harmon, no J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And really the ones that differ from what we're seeing right now is Hakeem Butler way lower, and I've talked about that. It just seems like the NFL people are going to be lower on Hakeem Butler than a lot of draft nicks and draft Twitter is. And people are excited about that height and speed and the combination of things that Hakeem Butler brings. But I think his rawness and I think teams, I don't know, for whatever reason, that's the vibe I'm getting from. And it's been a while. I tweeted out a few months ago. This is, I think, maybe late last year, maybe early January before the Senior Bowl, talking about when I was looking at players, the players I liked. I had Metcalf 1, I had Hakeem Butler 2, and I was like, you know what? But I bet Kyle Shanahan's rankings look more like Marquise Brown 1, Hunter Renfrow 2, and Hakeem Butler way down the line. And so we'll see if that's actually the case. But it's interesting to hear McGinn talk about this because he's been pretty spot on for years. This class might be a little bit more difficult to put your finger on because I think ratings are going to be a little bit more all over the place between teams. But Metcalf 1, Marquise Brown 2, it sounds like those are the options that teams are really looking at in the first round. Then he has Harry and Brown after that. And I would be surprised if any of the other players are sniffing the first round here that McGinn has listed. Hakeem Butler, I think, is one of those players that there'll be like 2 teams that love him and maybe have him number 1, and the other teams are just not sure about him, might have him a little bit later like McGinn has him listed here. But that's just a little preview. We'll talk more wide receivers next week. We're probably going to have to do a full episode where I break down the entire rankings of wide receivers and how I see them, because it's such an important position for the 49ers, especially this year, and they could go in any number of directions depending on how the draft board falls, and maybe multiple wide receivers could be selected. If I was a GM, I would attack that position this year because it's so good and so deep. You might as well get that value again later in the draft, because this year there's going to be players on day 3 that usually would be day 2 picks. Okay, some thoughts on the 2019 schedule for the 49ers, and then in segment 3, we will hear from some 49ers. It's strange how the NFL does their off-season approach and how some things are, they try so hard to make it a big deal. Schedule release is one of them. And if you're a beat writer and you follow the beat writers, there's so much talk about the draft, and it gets to the point where, and we've talked about it, it's like over-analysis and people are kind of numb to it and they're done with it. And then there's this new big thing scheduled release, and then they leak out a few things before the actual thing gets fully released. And it's not that big of a deal. We don't even know what these teams are going to look like. We don't know how good any, I mean, it's flipped on its ear, year to year. A team's good last year, they're terrible this year. A team finally becomes good after being terrible. So you can pull some things out of it, and there are some interesting nuggets to take away from the schedule. We'll talk about it a little bit here for one segment, because we have to, and we should give it its due, and you know, it's important. These are the games the 49ers are going to be playing, but I think way too much is made of it, and we'll get back to talking draft soon enough. And really, we're in the nitty-gritty. Things are getting finalized. The boards are getting finalized. My personal draft board is going to have to be finalized for this thing, and that will be what next week's shows are all about, leading up to Thursday night and the first round of the draft. So let's see. Big takeaways. First of all, and it's great being a 49ers fan. If the Jacksonville Jaguars were 2-14 drafting in the top two, they wouldn't be getting any primetime games. The 49ers have 3 primetime games, even though they've been one of the worst teams in the league record-wise for a few years now. And they're picking 2nd overall, and one of the teams they're in prime time against is the team that's picking 1st overall. The 2 teams with the worst record in the NFL last year, the Cardinals and the 49ers, are playing Thursday Night Football Week 9, and that's quite a surprise. I thought the 49ers, because they're, you know, a bigger market team, because they are global, they have fans everywhere, such a great fan base, they're an important team to the league, they're going to have some primetime games, even when they're not great. And that's the bonus of being a 49ers fan, is you're going to still be covered with your team. You know, if you're the Patriots and you're the Cowboys, and you're going to have primetime games. So the Cardinals 49ers primetime game, that's an interesting one. And maybe they're trying to build that as the, you know, the quarterback went 1, the pass rusher went 2. We'll see if Nick Bosa falls on Kyler Murray a couple times in that game. That'd be a great storyline for it. I still don't understand why they would want to put this game in primetime. Week 9 could be a situation where the Cardinals aren't a good team. They still have a lot of rebuilding to do, and we'll see what the 49ers look like this year, but it's a situation where there might not be a ton of wins when you count both teams together by Week 9. It would make more sense if they were going to put teams like this in primetime, maybe do it a little bit earlier in the season. Week 5 is the first primetime game, Monday Night Football, 49ers and Browns, a couple of teams that should be on the rise. That's going to be a fun one. I am actually really interested and pumped for that game. That game is going to be at home for the 49ers. And then another home game, the Arizona one, is on the road, by the way, in Arizona, Week 9. And then Week 10, the very next week. So kind of a semi-bye week there later in the season, which is good because the 49ers have such an early bye week. We'll more on that in a second. But Week 10, Halloween, October 31st, Monday Night Football, Seahawks and 49ers, which is going to be another good one. And at that point in the season, Week 10, you're hoping, as a 49ers fan, and the Seahawks re-upping Russell Wilson, you're hoping that that's a big-time divisional matchup. It's the first matchup with the Seahawks, also playing the Seahawks to end the season at Week 17. You're hoping there's some major playoff implications in the NFC West right there for the 49ers against the Seahawks starting in Week 10. Then there's a serious run down the stretch, and I think the best part of the season for the 49ers, even though there's some good teams down the stretch, you get 3 in a row at home. So you get that Thursday night, then you get 10 days off. You're coming from Arizona, so not a big trip from Arizona back to San Francisco or Santa Clara. And then you get that 10 days off before the Monday night game against the Seahawks. And then you stay home for 2 more weeks. You get Arizona coming in, and then you get the Green Bay Packers coming in. So getting to stay home for 3 weeks, that's important after 10 days off. That's a little mini bye vacation at the end of the season that will really help with the Week 4 bye, which is an unfortunate earliest bye possible for the 49ers, and you always want your team to have a bye week closer to the middle of the year than in Week 4. Let's talk about how this season starts off, which is an interesting one, at Tampa Bay, which is an infamous place for the 49ers to play after what happened with Reuben Foster last year. And that's September 8th, Sunday, September 8th, mark it. That is Week 1 in the NFL season, 49ers at Tampa. The Buccaneers are already favored by 2 points, it looks like, in the early Vegas lines. But, East Coast games, always tough. Back-to-back away games, Cincinnati Week 2. You got to believe there that it's going to be, I think one bonus actually, going back to Week 1 at Tampa, it's a 1:25 p.m. start Pacific, So that's a bonus. It's not the early 10 a.m. start East Coast as most of them are. So I think that does help a little bit as far as the travel goes and sleep and all that for these guys. But then it's the 10 a.m. start the next week in Cincinnati. Probably going to be that Youngstown, Ohio layover for the 49ers so they don't come all the way back to the West Coast and then jam back to Cincinnati in week two. Then the 49ers come home week three against the Pittsburgh Steelers, then have that week four bye. So I think that's going to be a huge calibration week in week four. You hope everybody's healthy. You hope Jimmy Garoppolo is ready to go in week one, and we'll hear from Jimmy Garoppolo, and it looks like things are headed in that direction. Very good sign from how he's doing in his rehab. The Buccaneers aren't a great team, new head coach. Cincinnati Bengals aren't a great team, new head coach. Pittsburgh Steelers seem to be falling apart a little bit, losing some stars off of that roster. So we'll see what kind of shape the Steelers are in. Big Ben, not the youngest guy anymore. That's a team that could be in the decline. So while it's rough to start 2 weeks on the road, I think you could have a worse run of opponents in those first 3 weeks. Week four, that's when you sit back, reevaluate before that first primetime game in week five, Monday Night Football, long bye week there, an extra day even. So hopefully the 49ers are sitting there 3-0 going into a big-time primetime matchup against the up-and-coming Browns, and then you are rolling into the season. Now, if the 49ers are only 1-2 or 0-3, then you've got some problems, I think, and the 49ers will have to make some major adjustments in week four. But an interesting schedule there. I don't think it's a terrible schedule as far as opponents' records from 2018 goes. I think the 49ers were ranked 10th most difficult record just as far as pure records versus the 2018 schedule. But of course, like I mentioned before, that's all on its ear. This is a new team. Things fluctuate so much from year to year with teams. The most important thing is that NFC West. You've got only one NFC West opponent, the Rams, week six in the first half of the season. And then you've got 5 of 8 against that NFC West in the second half of the year. And no, I'm not going to give you a prediction on record yet. We'll have to do that with a wink much later in the summertime. Let's see how this roster shapes out, right? We got to wait for the draft first before we start making predictions. I think it's about time we hear from Jimmy and Joe. And remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On 49ers on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On 49ers. Some 49ers taking the podium this week as the offseason program gets going. Jimmy Garoppolo, of course, the big story with him this offseason will be how his rehab is going with the knee.
Yeah, trust is a good word for it because it's really, you know, the movements are things you haven't done in a while. So I'd say like cutting, for example, the first cut you do, you know, you kind of go half speed, then you go 75, then you build it up slowly. And so I think it's a process. I mean, every movement, throwing, cutting, jumping, whatever it is. But once you've done it a couple times, your body reacts pretty quickly and remembers how to do it.
And one aspect I never really even thought about, it's like, okay, the knee, how's he going to hold up? How's his base? Is he going to be able to scramble a little bit? Is he going to have mobility in the pocket? I didn't really think about how it affects your arm. And he's not able to throw mechanically properly for months. And so now he's got to build that up and build back his arm strength because he can't be throwing 100% through all of this. And so I didn't really think about just the pure arm and the pure arm strength and how he's going to make throws and what kind of throws he's going to be able to make. And that'll be probably the most interesting thing to me now that I think about it, watching the preseason games and depending on how much action he gets in the preseason, how that ball's coming out and how the zip is on his throws. And is he able to get everything in from his lower body into his throw and his releases and have his accuracy on point and really feel like 100% just from a pure arm perspective, because all of that stuff is related. It's not just going to affect how he moves with that knee injury.
Very good to be throwing again. It's what I do, you know, so yeah, it's encouraging. You know, every day it gets easier and easier, you know, able to make this throw better than I was a week ago. And it's small victories like that throughout this whole process. It's all about small victories because, you know, it's, you're not going to jump out and be able to throw it 60, 75 yards again. So it's just small victories.
Overall, spirits are high at the 49ers facility. Shout out to Chris Biederman, who asked Jimmy Garoppolo a good question to allow him to have a little bit of fun with one of his teammates.
How do you think George is handling his new higher profile after last season?
George who?
Kittle.
Oh, God. George is the same old guy. He is. You know, great guy to have in the locker room, great guy. You know, just he keeps everyone's spirits up, and he's a high-energy guy, so you love to have that.
Is it true, his tweet to Antonio Brown was a dare from you?
I mean, it depends who you ask. But
yeah, he said it was.
He said it was?
Yeah.
I'd take it with a grain of salt then.
Speaking of having fun, no one has more of it than Joe Staley in the 49ers locker room and his little brother, practically Mike McGlinchey. They spent some time together in the offseason in the San Diego area, but then didn't work out. It's kind of strange.
It was fun. You know, he actually didn't even work out with me.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if there's something in the relationship that needs mending or, you know, maybe he's just moved on. But he wanted to go to Exos. He's more of a guy that kind of likes to live the, you know, spotlight life. My, you know, who I train with down there, I've been training with for like 4 or 5 years, and it's just me and him. It's not in the glitz and glam of Exos. So he was there with his guys, you know, Quentin Nelson was down there, Taylor Lewan, and he just kind of felt like maybe he could learn more things from them as opposed to me. So I got a ways to go before I catch up to those guys, apparently.
Is he always in here?
No, yeah, he was over all the time. We did yoga together. That was about the only thing we did.
Okay.
So made sure I embarrassed him in that.
Who's better at yoga?
Oh, my. If you see my face, he's super stiff. No, I've been doing it for a while, the last probably 2-3 years, so I am.
Wow, Joe calling Mike McGlinchey super stiff. That's fighting words, I think, man. I think McGlinchey probably sees himself as a super athletic offensive tackle, although Joe's one of the most freaky athletic. I think he ran a 4.7 something at the combine, former tight end, and Joe Staley's one of the most athletic tight ends we've seen in a while. And it sounds like the 49ers utilized Joe Staley's scouting report when it came to Dee Ford and what kind of a pass rusher and how difficult it was to block him. Sounds like Joe's glad he's on his side now.
That's what I love about this franchise, too. And then the guys that we have here is that they really reach out to the players and the guys that, you know, are going against them and have gone against certain players and ask for feedback. You know, I don't know how much stock they take into that, but just the fact that they reach out to the players and ask their opinions on all that stuff, so... You know, I told him exactly what I told you guys. He's one of the most explosive players I played against, and he was definitely a challenge to go against in the last year and every time I've ever played him.
Was he the only one that they asked about? Or I won't ask for specifics, but did you give negative reviews?
So I gave a detailed scouting report of about 20 different pass rushers and inside three techniques this year, and you know, strengths, positive, or strengths, weaknesses. Broke down their film, thought their best games, worst games. I went out to where they were this offseason and worked out with them for a week. You know, put them through the ringer and just kind of like trying to break them down and see who's really about football, who's not. So it was an exhausting offseason for me. I think, you know, we were able to land Dee Ford out of the whole process. So I think it was pretty good.
I know Joe Staley is in the last year of his contract, but I think I'm not alone in feeling like there's no reason to push him out the door if he wants to re-up for another potentially long-term contract. Yeah, I got no problems with that. Just having Joe Staley around, even if he declines a little bit, still playing at a high level. There's no reason for him to hang him up early. He's still playing well. And that would really lessen the impact if you knew Joe was going to be around for a while. Lessen the impact of what the 49ers might have to do looking ahead at the offensive tackle position. And you could maybe knock that need, that future need down a little bit as far as the draft goes this offseason and just keep one eye on it instead of really trying to attack that position. You know, and there is one offseason storyline that has not gotten a lot of attention, and it might be a multi-offseason storyline in the future contract extension of DeForest Buckner. Here's DeForest Buckner talking about how he's taken the approach to his potential new deal and staying with the 49ers for the long haul.
You know, honestly, it's very early. You know, just because I'm eligible for a new contract, you know, going to my fourth year, it's still very, very early in the process. And, you know, I'm really just looking forward to be here with the team long term. And I know, you know, Jed and John and Prague and all of them, Kyle, they all know that. And, you know, they know what I can bring to the table, you know, and what I bring to the team. And, you know, there's no rush to it.
Definitely not at a critical mass when it comes to DeForest Buckner's contract. And he's still got the fifth year option to play out. 49ers could franchise tag him if he needs so. And big money being thrown around to some of the best interior defensive linemen in the league. and DeForest Buckner is going to be next in line to get paid. And now it's just a matter of how much and what kind of a deal they can come to. It might be pretty, and it might be a tough deal to hammer out just because of what his side could potentially be asking compared to what kind of crazy money is out there with Aaron Donald's contract and some of these other ones. And if he has another huge year, it's only going to go up. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock, LockedOn49ers.com. We've got all the podcasts there, where to subscribe. I'm going to put some rankings up there this week as well, leading up to the draft and, of course, the shadow draft and breaking down everything here on the podcast. Thanks for listening, and remember, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Talk to you draft week right here on Locked On 49ers.